defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
So you don't need to be a rocket scientist to figure out things are not going well for the working class in this country. Yet all we hear coming out of the administration is how wonderful and how great the economy is, how Wall Street's fat and happy, and how never better. It's never been better. And for some, absolutely, positively, the truth, it has never been better for some. But for people who work, for people who toil, for people who struggle, I got to tell you, that $4,000 Trump prize we were promised never really materialized. In fact, I don't think I saw anything really coming out of the Republican tax scheme. But here to share some thoughts on why the middle class is in trouble and why ultimately the working class is in trouble as well, I've asked our good friend David Matlin from the Center for American Progress to come talk and share some thoughts on, well, why and how we turn things around. David, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, thank you very much for having me.
So, I mean, you know, look, I think most people who get up every day, they work hard, they play by the rules, and at best they're stagnated over the last decade or two, if not declining the standard of living. They know something seriously wrong, yet all the messaging we hear, man, is how great it is.
Yeah, well, I think because the reality, as you said, is pretty bleak when you talk about, you know, basic things that affect most people, their wages that they're dependent upon. And, you know, the typical worker, their wages have not increased for about four decades, you know. And, yeah, there's been some slight ups and downs, but over that whole period, pretty much nothing. Meanwhile, we know costs of important things like housing and health care have gone up much faster than inflation. So people are really feeling squeezed, especially when they see those at the top getting almost all of the gains of the economy, because we have been become a much richer country over those four decades. Just most people haven't gotten much of those riches.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we keep hearing about how wealthy we are as a country, you know, how, you know, we're at the wealthiest point in history. We're the wealthiest country in the history of civilization at its wealthiest point. I've heard that, you know, a number of times, yet we still have hungry. We still have homeless. We still have kids going to bed at night with empty bellies and not knowing where they're going to sleep tomorrow. We still have all of these problems. And we also have, as you've pointed out, a working class with stagnant wages and health care that is just, you know, for most people that I know who get up every day and struggle, healthcare is that issue where you go, you know, 20 years ago, we didn't have these problems. And just, you know, the constant struggle. And people are looking for why. And I go, well, it's simple to me. As a guy who spent most of my lifetime working union jobs, it's because we don't have enough workers in unions.
Yeah, the decline of unions has been one of the biggest stories in these problems. And that's for a couple of reasons. You know, so the things the unions do, first, they give workers some power at their particular workplace to improve the conditions and to get higher wages. And then when there's enough workers who can do that, those benefits tend to spread to other workplaces. So even non-union competitors tend to raise their wages. So that's not happening anymore. In fact, unions, when you're negotiating, are often just trying to hang on to what they've got. The other thing that's not happening is workers need a voice in our political system, and unions help give them that. They help organize people, bring them together so that they have a voice. They keep them educated about what's going on, and they help mobilize them to vote. And without that, our political system is almost totally responsive to the very rich who pay the lobbyists, who, you know, spend all sorts of money on campaign contributions. And so we have workers losing power in their workplace and in politics. And that is combined to create this huge, huge problem where the middle class and working class are getting really the short end of the stick.
Yeah, you know, I tell the story all the time. You know, I grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland, and it was because of a union job that my kids will never see the desperation and poverty that I grew up in. And I now live in a neighborhood with doctors and lawyers because the work that I did was compensated at a decent rate. And look, I worked hard, I played by the rules, and ultimately I was able to get ahead. And it's that kind of meritocracy that even I believe in, that if you do work hard and play by the rules, that you should get ahead. And I think that's one of those things that, you know, we as Americans have internalized as, you know, part of our DNA almost. But yet It's just not happening. And the argument that I get from people all the time is that unions are bad because, well, it raises the cost of labor. And they've the wealth class of this country has almost put that into our DNA, which is kind of scary to me.
Yeah. So, I mean, my view is that kind of stronger unions are about the only thing that can get us out of the current situation we're in. And that's, as you know, I talked about the power in both the workplace and in politics. And so, you know, we were talking earlier before the radio show about Janus, for example, one of the efforts that the powers that be have been trying to use to kill unions, which is this case that said that public sector workers can get the benefits of union without having to pay the cost, which is just one more way to sort of weaken the ability of unions to do all these good things we've talked about. And so that, you know, over the past several decades, unions were used to represent about 30% of all workers, and now down to 11% of all workers. At the same time that that's happened, sort of the share of the pie that the working in the middle class got has declined significantly. So the middle 60% of all of the nation's income, the middle 60% of all workers in the economy used to get, in the late 60s and early 70s, used to get about 53% of all the pie. So 60% were getting a little less, but they were getting a decent chunk of it. Now, as unions have declined sharply, they're getting little over 45%, which is just about the record low that they've ever got. Meanwhile, of course, we know that all those gains have gone to the top, and the top are now getting the highest share of the nation's income, basically, that they've ever received. And so, yes, this is a bleak picture that we're looking at, but we also, the signs of optimism I take is that the public is increasingly recognizing the value of unions and is more supportive of unions now than they pretty much ever have been. And they think unions provide value in the economy. They think they would join a union if they could. And so we have this push, and you even have elected officials being more and more willing and open to actually talk about the value of unions.
Yeah.
So we're still a long, long way from where we need to go, but I think you see some of the makings of a comeback.
Yeah, not to crush your optimism, but you know, I look at the ossification of our labor laws and how badly the pendulum has swung in favor of the employer class. And, you know, crushing the ability of workers to join unions. And, you know, I'll tell you, I look at President Obama as one of those people who, while he was a candidate, he never had a problem talking about how wonderful unions were, and it was effusive with praise. And yet they did, well, virtually nothing to make it easier for people to join and form unions. I know they sped up a little bit of the election time, but still, when you can browbeat someone in a captive audience meeting, and get away with it, you know, I don't know why hurrying up is going to help that much anyway.
Well, yes, the law is rigged against workers who want to join a union. We have, in the United States, about the worst labor laws of the entire advanced world. We have the weakest, lowest union density of any countries. And in fact, our union density in the private sector right now is lower than it was before the National Labor Relations Act was created in the 1930s. That was the law that was supposed to sort of enable workers to be able to join unions, and that law has been so weakened that unions are, you know, workers are able to join unions or to know much more than before that law was created. So, yes, the law is hugely tilted against workers, and, yes, for decades, politicians have given just sort of very weak lip service to the cause of unions, but I do sense something different now, and that's, you know, part of my job is to talk to elected officials about these kinds of issues. There seems to be a greater fear of what our country is becoming, and that means also a greater willingness to talk about real solutions. And so, yeah, it's still possible that the politicians won't follow through and just go with the money, but I sense a lot of energy and interest and optimism around what unions can do. And you can see that, you know, you saw the teacher strikes, last year. Those were hugely popular amongst the public,
right,
and they were quite successful in raising wages.
Yeah, but does it have to get to the point where you're so desperate that you have no alternative? I mean, if you looked at some of the tweets that were coming out of Oklahoma and you look at the conditions under which those teachers taught and those students learned, I mean, they were at least a decade behind making an argument for better wages and conditions. And it had to get to a point to where, you know, finally people were like, you know, we just can't do this. Does it have to get to that?
I don't know. Because
I have some libertarian friends who say, you know, we shouldn't have any labor laws. It should be, you know, workers should be able to get screwed over and it should be desperation. And then they wake up and go, oh, we should organize and we should fight back.
Well, that at some level. So I think that's sort of crazy, one, because we're humans and we can do better. But also, you know, that's sort of, I don't know if you read Marx, that's sort of his theory, is that the oppressed will rise up once economic conditions become so bad. But there's really very little truth to right. that, because the way power works, if people have so much power at the top, they can do all sorts of things to keep people down. And so my view is what we need to do is be a little bit smarter about that and create the conditions that enable workers to fight back. And we shouldn't have to get to, like, what is the bottom? When we're, like, digging in dirt again and looking, scratching for food? Or there is sort of no actual, you know, level that can be considered the bottom. It's just things could be a whole lot better, and we have the powers to change them. And when people come to that realization that they have the power to change them and take action, you know, that's sort of what all organization is about, and all organizing is about, is encouraging people to realize the power that they have to change the situation.
No, absolutely, and I'm with you on that, and I think we should be using smart policy. But my fear is what we're right now, we're looking down the barrel of a Supreme Court that will undo the entire 20th century. I mean, all of the New Deal, I think, will be under assault with this Supreme Court once you get Kavanaugh seated, if he gets seated, or if they put someone who is just as bad, if not worse, in his stead. It's one of those moments where you go, you know, what's it going to take for us as a society to really push back and say no more? I mean, how much more do you take is the question.
Well, I don't know. I do think people are willing, you know, so the Supreme Court, I share your fears. You know, we are going to sort of what you know, Lochner era kind of jurisprudence, which this is named after the, you know, the leaders of the court who thought that child labor laws were unconstitutional, that basically anything to make the economy work better for workers and the working class was unconstitutional. And so, yes, these extremists who are being considered for the Supreme Court really have a chance to undo so many of the things. But, and here is the public is with us on the value of unions. The public is with us on the concerns about stagnant wages, on the concerns about extreme inequality. And I think to be credible, you know, so while we can talk about Donald Trump, who has not delivered in any way on these claims, he ran as a different kind of politician. He was going to be not the same old standard Republican that was just going to help the rich. He was going to do something different. He was going to be a workers' president. He was going to raise wages. While he hasn't done that at all, and in fact, I wrote a piece where I talk about all the things he's done to harm workers, he showed that I don't think it's credible anymore to just go with the same old policies and the same old rhetoric, and I think both sides now have at least started to say, you know what, we have a wage crisis and we have to do something about it, and that is fertile terrain for talking about real solutions.
No, I'm right there with you, and I've said from the, you know, 2015 on that he's stolen labor's message. I mean, he took Bernie Sanders' message, which was the exact same thing. I mean, I'm not a Trump supporter, but I think, you know, going after China and trying to reduce our trade deficit there is a good thing. And I'm not against the idea of using tariffs to try and do that. I know some people are, but something eventually has to be done. But at the end of this, you're right. I don't see anything that Trump has done to help the working class. And I see a lot of things that he's done to help his cronies and the very wealthy in this country.
Yeah. And, you know, so Trump clearly was right that trade was rigged and that we could do far better. I don't actually think he's going about it the best way, but he was exposing the weaknesses of the sort of the elite consensus of this is what's good for you and we're going to do it to you. he provided the challenge against this sort of conventional wisdom that both parties were part of, that were screwing workers. And so I think there's much, much greater room now for people to push against the conventional wisdom that was that is harming unions. And so yeah, it's a really bleak time in United States history where, as you know, we have long period of stagnation of wages, we have record high inequality, and we have a democracy that is almost totally captured by the rich. So yes, what are our solutions to that? Well, there really aren't many other solutions besides stronger unions. All the other kind of policies you think need organized workers to make them work. Let's say you raise a really high minimum wage, but you still got to figure out some way to enforce it. Only organized workers can enforce that. Let's say you get money out of politics. Well, the rich still have all sorts of built-in advantages. You need to have workers have some organized power in the political system. Only unions can deliver that. So I think, we talked about how bad the conditions have to get before people fight back. Well, I think just at a minimum, the solutions are pretty clear, and that unions help deliver some of the key solutions we need.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think it's pretty clear that we're at a point right now of, I talk to people all the time who are, they're almost at desperation levels. I mean, you talked about the Lochner era there for a second. And, we're almost back to, Joseph Lochner and the bakery making people work 60 hours a week for poverty wages. And that whole era of, if you're hungry enough and desperate enough to work in deplorable conditions for poverty wages, it was your choice, it was your freedom, it was your liberty to do such a thing. And look, they're making the same bad arguments today that they did back in 1905. And at the end of it, the hope is that we wake up and wise up and fight back. But David, I appreciate the time, the thoughts. Really good stuff.
Always a pleasure to talk to you, and if the subject's a little depressing.
No. Look, I mean, the hope is, you got to know what the problem is before you can get angry about it. And then once you get angry about it, we know how to move forward and fix it. And I appreciate the time, man. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Good stuff. David Madlin, senior fellow and senior advisor to the American Worker Project there at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. If you want to check out his stuff, AmericanProgressAction.org, the website. We'll make sure we get the article out so folks can take a good look at it. Quick break, right back to wrap things up. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We're the first ones to die. The first ones in line for that pie in the sky.